Okay. Good morning and welcome everyone to our conversation about trauma. My name is Natalie Ramirez and I'm a member of the Catholic Charities team. Today I'm with Joanna Miller, Clinical Supervisor of Villa Maria Outpatient Mental Health Clinic at Falstaff. Thank you, Joanna, for joining us. And if you could tell us a little bit more about yourself, that would be wonderful.
Thanks. I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I've been in the field for about 13 years, working for Catholic Charities the whole time. So I got my start in our residential treatment center, where I learned all about trauma as I worked with our kids and families, and also became certified in trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, which is just a fancy way of saying I've got some extra training to work with kids and to work with kids around trauma. I also sit on our agency's trauma-informed care committee, which really works hard to make sure that we're considering how trauma impacts not only the folks we serve, but also our staff and our programs, and looking at environmentally what we can do to address trauma and trauma reactions, and really kind of taking it bigger than just a kind of narrow clinical picture. And on top of all that, I also do some work around understanding trauma related to identity, specifically lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning, LGBTQ identity, and understanding that there can be identity traumas as well. So lots of different things, but throughout the 13 years, trauma's been a big part of the work that I'm doing.
Trauma, of course, is not necessarily a topic that I'm familiar with, and I'm very honored and eager to have this conversation to learn more about this topic with you. So since today we're talking about trauma in general, what it is, how to recognize it, and what to do if you've been affected by it, one of the key things in understanding trauma is finding out what it is and how to differentiate it from other things that can impact someone's life and their health. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. So when I hear the word trauma or traumatic, I think of an event or an experience that might alter someone's life, whether it be an illness, an accident, you know, God forbid, the victim of a crime. Are those examples, am I on the right track when I'm thinking about trauma?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the key thing to know about trauma is that it's got three parts to it. So the first part is the event. So you're talking about events that happen to people. So all the things that you named are great examples. Physical abuse, sexual abuse are also examples that come to mind sometimes. Terrorism can be traumatic for people. But the key factor in trauma is not just the event, but how someone responds to it. So the second two components are, first of all, is it perceived by the person as harmful? Either emotionally harmful or physically harmful or life-threatening. It has to be a pretty significant feeling of harm. That doesn't mean that the outside observer would say that it was harmful necessarily, but the person experiencing it, really experiencing it as a harmful event, either to themselves or someone close to them. So witnessing something can also be traumatic. And then the third component is how the impact how that experience impacts them long-term. And so you can experience something that's harmful or scary or life-threatening, and some people can just kind of wipe themselves off and move on. That wouldn't be a trauma for them. What makes it a trauma is that after the event, weeks or months later, someone is still experiencing an impact on their social life, their emotional life, mental, spiritual. So there's a sort of a wide range of ways that something could impact someone. And using that broad definition is really nice because then it allows us to look at trauma not only as a singular event, but as, like I was saying, like identity trauma as well. So we can look at things like racism as a trauma and understand that someone who is consistently exposed to either overt or sort of more subtle racism can feel that same kind of harm or threat or concern about their safety, and that can have a long-term impact on the way they engage with the world as well.
So along those lines, I guess it's tempting to think that we sometimes overuse the word trauma, but do we actually identify it less frequently than we should then?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it feels overused often because people really do sort of identify it as that event. And so in my schema, in my world, maybe something like a minor fender bender wouldn't be a trauma for me. You know, I could brush it off, I could move on. And so when someone else experiences that and they say, oh, I was traumatized or that was a trauma for me, it's really easy to say, no, that's not really what trauma is. But when we acknowledge that it's someone's experience afterwards, it really broadens how frequently trauma does impact people, because everyone's experience is different and their level of resilience might be different as well.
So what are some of the signs or symptoms of trauma?
So there's a whole bunch. There's a whole bunch. So sort of the classic signs and symptoms that you see on TV, right? Like a PTSD kind of trauma is nightmares or flashbacks. But there are lots of other things too, like increased irritability, hypervigilance, where someone's always looking around, looking out for threat, avoiding things that remind them of what happened. So someone gets in that big accident, big car accident, and they just always avoid that intersection where the accident happened. That kind of avoidance is an example. And what's really interesting about trauma as a clinician is that a lot of trauma responses look like some typical things that we see sort of as run-of-the-mill kind of clinical diagnoses. So depression, for example, someone who's having difficulty sleeping and staying at home and not going out anymore, that looks like classical depression, but those could be trauma symptoms. That could be avoidance happening and not really wanting to go out, or numbing and trying to just get rid of all the thoughts and feelings around the trauma. ADHD in children is another great example. We see kids often who can't sit in their seats and are getting out of their seats and not being able to attend to the classes that they have. And that looks like ADHD. It's a very easy diagnosis to give. Sometimes when we dig deeper and say, hey, what else has been going on in your life? We find out that that child was always able to attend and focus until something happened. And now they no longer can. And that is a trauma reaction, not classic ADHD. So it really runs the gamut. And it's why it's so important that we're asking what happened to people and not just assuming that, you know, something is some other diagnosis or something else is going on.
So in your practice as a clinical social worker, what would you say is the percentage of individuals you see that have probably experienced some type of trauma in their lives?
Almost everyone. Some of that comes from my experience being, you know, predominantly for the first 8 years of my career in residential treatment. That's an almost 100% of kids and families have experienced that. But I think most people in their life experience something that rises to the level of the event potentially being traumatic. Some people do have more of that resilience built in. We know that resilience is sort of the number one factor that prevents a trauma reaction from happening. And we know that resilience comes from things like having a good self-esteem, having control of situations, being able to problem solve, having a support system. So the more of those things that are in place, the less likely that someone's having a trauma reaction. But almost everyone has had some kind of event in their life that, you know, with circumstances being a little different or a situation being a little different, could be experienced as traumatic.
I know you've touched upon this briefly when I asked you about some of the signs and symptoms of trauma, but what are some of the other impacts trauma can have on a person from a psychological standpoint?
So yeah, absolutely. So I think the big ones are that are sort of the things I talked about, the inattentiveness, the inability to focus. Complex traumas can fundamentally change the way the brain works. So when we talk about trauma and we talk about a simple trauma, that could be you've been going through life fine, something really tragic happened, something really scary, and then you keep going through life sort of fine. Your environment's still safe, things feel really okay. But for folks who've experienced complex trauma, so they have been through, you know, we see children, for example, who maybe were abandoned, you know, at an early age, went through multiple foster homes, experienced fear about their livelihood just in terms of where they're living over and over and over again, we see the brain sort of fundamentally change and sort of stay in that fight, flight, freeze response and that hypervigilance that comes along with that, which can include being really irritable or aggressive because you're just trying to make it through the day. And you can imagine if you're always on alert, little things get you upset a little bit faster. So that's a common psychological impact that we see on children and then also into adulthood as well.
So these impacts, what types of examples have you seen in individuals as far as what they are unable to do, what prevents them from doing some of the normal things that you and I would do that we take for granted maybe?
So in children's school is the number one place where we see the impact because there are expectations there about how they behave, how they move through the day. And there's lots of space for what we would call triggers, for things to trigger that trauma reaction and that trauma response. So a child who's been abused, for example, physically abused by an adult male, has a male teacher, and the male teacher approaches them and wants to do some work with them and is just trying to help out. And it immediately takes them back to that place of physical abuse. And then they have that fight, flight, freeze freeze response, and maybe become aggressive or maybe shut down or maybe can't attend to work. So we see that in children quite a bit where they really start to have difficulty in school. And then in adults, similarly, being able to attend to work or to tasks that are provided at work or engaging in social activities sometimes can be a real challenge. So it really runs the gamut depending on what the trauma was. And again, depending on how complex it was and how likely it is to happen again. So all of those things kind of work together to determine how someone's impacted.
What would you say are some of our biggest misconceptions about trauma?
I think the first one's the one we already talked about, that it's something that only happens to some people for big events and that those events are easily identifiable and that they're always a trauma. So we sort of talked about that. I think the other misconception is that trauma is a one-time impact, and even if you're dealing with it a little while later, it doesn't have a lifetime impact. This is particularly true when we talk about children. People often think that children just kind of get over it or it's not a big deal. But we know, for example, that children, even babies have a body experience of trauma when they're not attended to as young babies. So, for example, a baby who is crying, that's the fundamental sign. I'm in danger. That is what a baby does. I'm in danger of starving, so I am going to cry. And an adult doesn't respond in a prompt way or maybe at all for a period of time. That baby's getting body messages about what is safe and what is not safe. And those can last a lifetime in terms of as they get older. If fundamentally you've learned that the adults around you don't keep you safe, then your relationships are impacted by that. All of our relationships are predicated on the idea that we have each other's back, or that someone has my back. It might not be the person I'm with, but my mom does for sure, my dad does for sure. And not having that can have a lifetime impact. The other thing is that trauma is not just an emotional or psychological, doesn't just have those impacts. It also has a physical impact. So lots of studies have been done showing that young children and all the way through age 18 who've experienced what they call adverse experiences, maybe they experience it as a trauma or maybe it's just a really bad event. Long-term, the more of those that they experience in childhood, the more health impact there is. So things like obesity, diabetes, substance use, suicidality, certainly, depression on the mental health side of things, all can come from early childhood experiences and later childhood experiences of trauma. And it doesn't just go away if we're not addressing it.
We never used to talk about this topic and some of these symptoms and other experiences related to trauma. But since the Gulf War in the early 90s, it's been discussed much more often because of post-traumatic stress disorder. What's the difference between PTSD and a more common response to a trauma?
It's a great question. So PTSD is a great diagnosis in the sense that it gave some validity to the feelings and experiences people were having, that really bad and scary things were faced. And then afterwards, people were having a really negative response. PTSD, though, really requires that someone's having symptoms in all of the kind of categories I named, that they're dealing with some avoidance, that they're having intrusive thoughts, that they're having mood changes, that they are increased irritability and arousal. And so for a clinical diagnosis, they really have to meet all of these criteria in a certain way, in a certain time frame. And that can be a pretty heavy lift. I mean, not everyone meets all of those criteria. So the difference between PTSD and just an ordinary different kind of trauma reaction is largely just the number of criteria someone meets. It's entirely possible for someone to be having a greater impact than someone with a PTSD diagnosis, but it's only in one or two of those categories. So it doesn't meet that sort of threshold for diagnosing. In that case, clinically, there are other things that you can diagnose that highlight that there was trauma. A great example too is, someone who is avoiding anything that makes them think about the trauma. When you screen them for PTSD, they're going to come back with a pretty low score because they're not talking about it and they're not trying to think about it and they're not trying to deal with it. And so their avoidance score will be very high. But when you look at other components, they're not going to meet that criteria. And so we may end up screening later on and find out that no, now they actually do, now that we've done some work.
If someone has an issue that is showing up in their behaviors, or if they know they've dealt with the trauma, what should they do?
So I think the key issue is exactly what you said. If it's showing up in behaviors, I think that's a great time to try to talk to a therapist, or if someone has access to an EAP, that can be a good starting point to just kind of find out, is there something that can be done, some kind of new skill that can be learned to address the feelings. What trauma work and trauma treatment really does is tries to help someone reprocess the situation that happened so that they're able to think about it differently, understand it from sort of an outside perspective as well as their inner perspective, and make meaning of it, as hard as that can be to do. And it can be really hard to do. But in many cases, it's not as hard as it sounds. It feels so overwhelming to the person experiencing it that it feels like, oh, I'll be in therapy for years. But a lot of trauma treatment's pretty short term, and it's just learning some new skills to manage. So experiencing a trauma, maybe you may want to talk to someone. I'm a therapy fan, so yeah, go talk to someone. Therapy's great. But certainly once you start to see behaviors, or you're avoiding things, or you're not eating the same, or you're more stressed out, that's a great time to talk to someone.
Do you think there's anything that the public needs to know in general about trauma that we haven't already talked about today that would be of great importance for them to know, whether it's to apply to themselves or a loved one or a friend or someone in their community at large?
I think the biggest thing that we should be talking about trauma is preventing it from the very beginning. That the more prevention that we can do by providing supports to families, to adults, to children, by making sure that we're teaching people skills about how to manage problems and think through things in a little more, in a different way, that the more that we do those kinds of things, the more that we prevent those trauma reactions from even happening to begin with. And then that, of course, has all of those positive health outcomes if you prevent trauma to begin with. So if we can do more preventative work on the front end of things, we will be in a much better position. And the other thing with that is that I think that preventative work really, really starts with making sure people have resources and access to things that they need. It's very often when I see significant complex trauma, what I also see is a lack of resources and a lack of supports. And so a family that doesn't have supports and doesn't have resources may not be able to access the things that they need to prevent trauma from happening to begin with. So the more we can do that, the less you'll need people like me.
Well, I just want to, Joanna Miller, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today and to share your expertise and your knowledge. And thank you for all the hard work that you do for us as a clinical supervisor at the Villa Maria Outpatient Mental Health Clinic in Falstaff. If you think that someone who is listening to this may need behavioral help or mental health, please go to catholiccharities.md.org/behavioral health and click on the link for behavioral health clinics. Make sure to click on tomorrow's link so you can learn more about the trauma and healing that we'll be talking about in the next several days. Thanks so much for listening, and thank you for your time, and be well.